welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we're seeing if we have bulletproof feet in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it was another weekend of heading to the team bottom of the table, and despite dominating proceedings, we managed to come away with only a point. But alas, it's a point we didn't have, and it's better than nothing, which is what it would have been had we not come up with a late equaliser. We now head into the international break, and we have players jetting off all over the world to represent their countries. But for those not travelling anywhere, particularly those who may not have hit their levels yet this season, it's a chance for some R&R and to come back firing for the hectic period leading up to Christmas. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wears, and we are delighted to welcome back an Albion fan and a French football expert in the shape of Jeremy Smith. Hello, Jeremy. Last time we saw you, we were just about to play Marseille. that's not happening this season, unfortunately.
No, it feels like quite a long time ago now, more than just
2 years
ago.
Years.
Yeah.
To the week.
How have they taken to our ex over there in the south of France?
He's doing really well. Scored at the weekend against my French team, typically.
You're talking about De Zerbi, aren't you? And you're talking about Matt O'Reilly. We'll come to that in a little bit.
O'Reilly's our estranged one. It's De Zerbi that's the ex.
Yeah, I mean, Roberto, I mean, he's Roberto. So, yes.
Well, that's what I was asking him. How have the Marseillais taken to him?
I don't know what it is with Marseille. Like they probably the kind of club they are. They probably need someone sort of very boring, a steady hand, that kind of thing. But they always go for Villas-Boas or Bielsa or Sampaoli, people like that. And obviously, De Zerbi's kind of more that sort of mould. And so there's been a couple of very fractious moments, definitely a couple last year and even at the start of this season. But, you know, it's a football club, football fans, they're capricious, they're on a very good run at the moment. So at the moment, everything's sweetness and light, but it just takes one bad result. Well,
with the way that the ultras are over there, I mean, what you're saying is they need perhaps like a Giroud kind of character there rather than the bombastic De Zerbi.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Giroud's had his moments as well, but more like, you know, Didier Deschamps is the last guy who won the league for Marseille as a coach. You know, pretty boring, knows how to straight bat every single answer in a press conference. No one likes having to go to those press conferences, but he does the job.
It sounds very familiar. It sounds like someone who might be in the dugout at Brighton right now.
Slightly older, but yeah.
Do you find Fabian Hertz's answers boring?
I find him boring, yes.
Why?
Because I don't know. Well, you can only answer the questions you're asked, right? I suppose.
Right.
Let's put it that way. But yeah, no, I mean, there's a bit of frustration sneaking in around a lot of the stuff with the Albion at the moment. And obviously, if you're reading social media and things like that, which we don't really pay an awful lot of attention to perfectly honest, but there does seem to be a little bit of frustration sneaking
in. But why does that make Hertzler boring?
Because the team is showing his personality on the pitch and it's not as exciting.
Hang on. I'm asking you, why is Hertzler himself boring? What is it that makes him boring?
Well, his outfit isn't particularly boring. I mean, he looks like he's having a cigarette break at SeaWorld and he's taking his head off.
I give up. I'm going to ask you this next week, though. We'll see if you can come up with an answer.
Oh, yeah, do that. I just think that there's. I think he's... no, we haven't mentioned his age for a while, have we?
But I mean, let's put it this way. He's not as psychotic as De Zerbi, but then very...
No, but I mean, basically, I mean... He's a young coach. He's learning his trade, and there's a lot more to come from him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And he's very much learning on the job at the moment, and there are some. It's just frustrating. It's like, I mean, it doesn't matter who the manager is, and this is something we're going to touch on in a minute, Jeremy, as well. It doesn't matter who the manager is. Going to somewhere like Wolves, who are currently bottom of the table, can't win for toffee, and not picking up maximum points, as opposed to going to somewhere like Chelsea and winning, that is just the Brighton way at the moment. And it's like we need to find somewhere a balance somewhere in the middle.
You also have to bear in mind, though, that I mean, Wolves are still a Premier League side. All right, their form at the moment says that they haven't won in seven. Hey, we've gone, you know, six games defeat. It depends on when you look at the sort of where the table is. When we went on our run with Graham Potter, we lost six games in a row. If that was at the beginning of the season, people start muttering and saying he's got to go. But no one said that. We lost six in a row. Then I think we got a draw against Norwich and then turned it round and beat Arsenal, Man United, and what have you. So the point is that that particular run of results, as they say in Ted Lasso, you never talk about a streak, doesn't really sort of say anything. I mean, if Wolves are going to spend the rest of the season not winning a game, then that's one thing. But there is absolutely no right for us to win a game. We have to earn that right, not just get given it just because of Wolves' current form.
Oh no, absolutely not. But I'm just saying, it's just frustrating that the points seem to come in the way we should be. It's hard to put it into words, really. I mean, I don't understand it, Jeremy. Why we can't beat the teams that technically, well, you should be beating, I suppose, as opposed to the teams that should be beating us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to use the usual cliches, but you know, any match away from home in the Premier League is going to be tough, and you don't sort of hashtag teams like Brighton don't necessarily sort of step onto the pitch in an away match automatically thinking we're definitely going to win. I mean, I find, for example, this draw a lot less frustrating than the Fulham one at the start of the season. For obvious reasons. At least this was a sort of last minute comeback rather than being pegged back last minute. I think it's partly the context of where Wolves are, although last week they were only sort of one late kick away from beating Spurs, who, you know, according to everyone, have had a great start to the season, and because we've got such a good recent record at Molineux. But then I suppose, you know, similarly to what you were saying the other day, after the Chelsea match, although that was a bit different because we ended up winning it, it's more the frustration that we didn't start playing until quite late into the match. And then again, it's another cliche, but when we kind of start playing for a full 90 minutes, we're a match for anyone. But it just feels like we're either having a good first half or a good second half and not yet a full good 90
Yeah,
minutes.
we haven't had a good 90 minutes for quite some time,
I don't
actually.
think that if you're talking about the levels of fitness and work rate that we're talking about, for instance, with the second half against Chelsea and the last third against Manchester City, I don't think that level of work rate is actually possible for 90 minutes. There will always be times when a given team will have the ball, they'll have their opportunities, they'll have, even if we win a game handsomely, three, four, five, whatever it might be. And we have done. There is always times where the other team has had a chance and they've messed it up. So to have, I mean, this is all about, and I've mentioned this in the last couple of weeks or so, this is about Hertzler. And I hate the phrase game management, but it's about using the 90 minutes and the 16 players that he's got at his disposal to the best effect. And if that means that we have a sluggish first 20 minutes, or if we have a I'd rather we grew into the game rather than the game be thrown away, which I think was the latter was really what happened against Fulham. So I'd rather we grew into the game like we did against Chelsea, like we did against Manchester City and got the result, like we did against Wolves and came back. Against Spurs, forget it, we were terrible for 90 minutes, and how we got a draw out of that, I'll never know. So that level of work rate, I just don't think is possible for
Well,
90 minutes.
the stats are that we lead the league in terms of points gained from 1-0 down, and yet we've yet to win from 1-0 up.
Well, that's the point I'm making. The game is 90 minutes. So, in theory, it doesn't matter when you score. It's what the score is when the final whistle goes. That's the important bit. And we showed that. I mean, as Jeremy pointed out, Fulham scored on 90 plus six or whatever it was. We scored on 88 or whatever it was. At the end of the day, the result's the same. It doesn't matter within reason when you score. It just matters that you score.
In the seven games so far, we've yet to score in the first half in six of them.
Well, okay. So, you know, but the game is 90 minutes, so
I
is
think
to judge over the first 45 is a little bit pointless.
kind of going back to sort of stuff you were saying about Herzler earlier. I mean, for me, the two things that he always goes back to in interviews and certainly sort of at the end of last season and sort of pre-season or in between the two seasons was that he felt last year the team weren't sort of at their best fitness wise and intensity wise. And the other thing is the sort of always going on about team spirit, which I think only takes you so far, but I think those comebacks have shown maybe those two things in effect. Like I agree, you can't necessarily show full intensity for 90 minutes. So maybe it's better that you save that kind of the sort of better side of yourself for the second half, so that you sort of end the match on the up rather than Fulham, for example. And I'm sort of hoping this whole physical intensity thing, maybe sort of later in the season when other teams, especially the European ones, are tiring, maybe that's when we'll be able to kind of have some kind of advantage. But it's a lot to sort of pin your hopes on, I think,
Absolutely, but
just
it kind of
physical.
implies that the season itself is a microcosm of every game. In other words, we're misfiring on the first half, and then after Christmas in the second half, here we go, flying out the traps, and we're not going to lose a game between Christmas and the end of the season. You heard it here first.
Also, like you said, also the was it the four substitutions against City, the match changing substitutions against Chelsea. I mean, arguably one of the biggest reasons for a turnaround against Wolves are the substitutions they made, which Wolves fans have been really annoyed about, sort of going so defensive. I agree with what you said earlier, especially with five subs, that it is about using your full squad or your 16 players across the match, not just the 11. But I've always had this feeling when people rave about managers changing the match with their substitutions. I've always sort of thought, well, why didn't they get it right from kickoff? Why did they need to come up with some kind of stroke of genius? So it's a bit of both, I think.
Well, Hertz has always come out and said that he wants the players to train like they play, which is basically intense, 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 which is working for some better than others, I'm sure. And I think there is probably a little bit of fatigue in there.
Well, I was just about to say another thing is that one of the downsides of players not being as fit as they could or should be is that they're more likely to pick up injuries. Now, touch wood, and this is not my fault if it goes badly wrong, is that we haven't actually been blighted by injuries this season to the same extent that we have been over the last 2 or 3 years. Now, one wonders, and it is a supposition rather than a statement of fact or knowledge, that if those players are that much fitter, then injuries are, as a general rule, less likely. I don't know. I'll throw that one out there for you.
Well, players are always going to be less injured if you're winning games, Al.
Funny that as well, yeah. Although sometimes you do have a problem. It's a problem you have in business management. Not so
Well,
much of absenteeism, is of presenteeism, which is basically turning up when you really shouldn't be.
that is something that is probably more prevalent in days gone by than now, because the medical science is thus that it should be. Okay, well, I mean, in regards to the team itself, Rafa came in for the injured Veltman. Gruder and Welbeck returned to the starting 11 at the expense of Jorginho and the injured Karu Mitoma. Kostoulas was in the match day squad for the first time in a Premier League game.
What have you made of the two Greek kids then, Jeremy, from what you've seen of them?
Well, I haven't been able to make much of Kostas yet. I understand all this stuff about he's a young kid, he needs to get used to the intensity of English football. And I think, not necessarily at Brighton, but we've seen it with other players, even players, obviously with my French hat on, there's a lot of players who've come straight from the French League to Premier League with a good caliber, a good reputation, and maybe thrown in too early, and it's affected them and their form and again their reputation going forward. So I do understand the idea of kind of bringing them in slowly, but at the same time, I also feel like that is last year, this time last year, it really felt like we'd kind of forgotten about bringing in any defenders during the off season. This year, I worry about the sort of centre forward position. I know it's a weird thing to say because we brought in these two Greek centre forwards or strikers, but if they're not ready, or Tsimas is gradually getting in there, but if they're not ready, it's putting a lot of reliance on Welbeck. And the fact we've been starting Rutter as a number nine, and he's not a number nine, and I love him, but he's not a goal scorer, a natural goal scorer, that's a big issue as well. And I think we are sort of probably leaving a few goals out there or chances out there because we should have brought in someone a little bit more established.
Or
And
let
again,
people
we're only
go
sort
that.
of one injury away, and especially when it's Welbeck, the injury's never far away from not having any centre forward.
Well, it's interesting if you see the thing of Brighton Unlocked when I kind of find it kind of fascinating that the fact that the cameras are allowed into the dressing room for the manager to sort of say what he wants to say. And I admittedly it usually is when we've had a draw or a win. But after Welbeck scored his brace at Chelsea, Hertzler said something quite telling. And Danny Welbeck, I'm paraphrasing, but Danny Welbeck, good to see you back. Now, the camera then sort of zoomed in on Welbeck, and he kind of smiled, but it was a kind of a slightly lopsided smile, as if to say, "What do you mean I'm back? I never went away." And it's kind of an implicit, for me, it comes across as an implicit criticism, unless Danny Welbeck himself is also realizing that certainly so far with it this season, with the exception of the Chelsea game, he has been slightly misfiring. We know he can come back because he did it against Chelsea, so it's about, him doing what he wherever it is he can. But I think that, to sort of to add on to tack on to your point, Jeremy, yeah, we've got Rutter, who he, in my opinion, I think he can probably lead the line a little bit better than you're making up, although the obvious one is Welbeck. Simas, like I say, a work in progress. I am seeing, I can't believe I'm about to go Norman Lamont here. I am seeing the green shoots of a decent player, but obviously you have to remember he's still only what 12 years old, whatever it is. So he, there is something about Simas that makes me think there is something that could happen here. And but you're right to rely on Welbeck and or Rutter, excuse me, as our principal line leaders is slightly worrying when one isn't 100% comfortable in that position and the other
Right.
one isn't quite on form.
Well, I mean, we're talking about Danny Welbeck, and if we're talking about the Wolves game, we can't not talk about Danny Welbeck and their goal. I haven't
Defensively.
seen such a 50p header head since like George Santos playing against Yeovil back in League One. It was like,
The
I
things
mean.
you remember, AD.
I'm like, it's like Crichton from the
Oh,
Red
and from
Dwarf.
Crichton from Red Dwarf, yeah.
It's like, I mean, it was such a terrible, terrible header. I don't know what he was thinking, because anywhere than where he headed it would have been pretty much safe.
Wasn't the best, was it, Jeremy?
No, not at all. I don't know if it was just mistimed. I mean, it was a very good volley, and it was obviously very bad luck that it came off of Bruggen's back. But yeah, it was a really poor header, and I suppose it's not really good enough to say, oh, it's a striker's defensive header, because Welbeck is a very, very accomplished header of the ball. But
Absolutely. One
yeah.
can only assume he didn't realise what was behind him because, like I say, he was kind of on his own. There was a good two or three Albion players around him. No one gave him a shout to say away. Why he sat stuck in, unless he was felt confident enough that he could clear that line of attackers that was on the 18-yard line. Well, you're not going to make that mistake again. But also, was it a case of where on earth do I put it? Because he hadn't got a clue what was behind him. No one gave him that call. That doesn't mean to say you then put it back in the mix, which is, like you say, it's a bit like a keeper making a save, and rather than pushing it to the side, just puts it straight in the path of the on-running attacker. Yeah, but let's face it, as you would say, AD, he's better in the plus column at the moment for us, even in the what 5 years he's been with us.
I mean, if anyone who's listened to this show regularly over the years knows how much I love Danny Welbeck,
Yeah.
and I've made this point several times over the last few weeks. He's a Rolls Royce of a footballer, but at the moment he's a Rolls Royce of a footballer who's going to be doing the London to Brighton Vets run in November. It's like he's just not hitting
He's not hitting the
his
straps he
heights. I
could
mean,
do,
and
yeah.
it's just form. It is just form.
Absolutely.
I mean, the two goals kind of papered over the cracks a little bit
I don't
because
I don't agree. I think they were just
I don't think it was
chances
good.
he took. They were just chances he took. And don't forget, he knows the second he headed that ball, probably even before it was belted back, he knows he cocked it up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not having a go at him per se. I'm just basically saying that I just know that the player that he is and how good he is, I don't think we've seen that player yet this year, despite him scoring two goals at Chelsea last week.
Well, no, well, I think you can't really say that Chelsea was a flash in the pan because he's had his chances.
Yeah.
But
Well, that's
also, I
it.
mean,
We're not really
if you're talking
creating
about a player who's
chances.
off form, then again, we saw something a little bit of a renaissance in Carlos Baleba. But I mean, I don't know if the international press are talking about him, especially Jeremy, as he was, touted at Man United over the summer. But can you account for Carlos Baleba's form at the moment?
No, I mean, the only thing that I can put it down to, same as everyone else, is that the United links unsettled him. But I've never really thought that's enough of an excuse for any footballer. I'm going to say something sacrilegious here, but of all the sort of Chelsea players that are booed, I've never entirely understood why Caicedo gets so much abuse. Because, all right, he sort of pushed for a move in the January, but then he did knuckle down for the rest of the season.
I don't think he does
And
get any abuse. Nothing
no?
like the amount that Cucurella does, believe me.
Oh
He
yeah,
doesn't
well,
get it.
quite
He
right too. That's
largely gets it. He gets away. I mean, Sanchez, he gets a load of stick. Cucurella gets a load of stick. But Moises he pretty much doesn't get anything at all.
it's probably a bit Spinal Tap. There's so many ex-Brighton players being booed, but he's still getting the boos from the previous player when he gets the ball. But he did knuckle down for the rest of his time at
Yes, he
Brighton, and
did.
I hope
Yes, he did.
Baleba does that. But he's very young. He's got his reputation, in theory, is only going one way. So even if he didn't get United in the summer, which may turn out to be a blessing in disguise anyway, the way the state they're in at the moment.
Yep.
If he gets his head back and has a good season, he's going to have a bigger club, arguably, move in the summer if that's what he wants. So,
But would you say that given his current form, I mean, I know it's hypothetical and players aren't trading commodities per se, but would you say his stock has fallen a bit in the past couple of months?
I think it definitely has. I mean, everyone knows there's a very good player there. So even if it wasn't to get back to sort of last year's standards by the summer, I think there's enough clubs there around who know that there's the makings of a proper world-class midfielder, so we'll take the punt. But certainly in terms of transfer fee, in terms of sort of salary, maybe in terms of choice for him of the clubs going for him, if he doesn't get back to form, then he's certainly not going to get the sort of choice or the sort of money that he'd maybe be getting if his trajectory only went up rather than sort of plateauing as it is at the moment.
Sure, but I think the issue that we're talking about here is the reason we're talking about him, and the reason it's so marked is one, he set a high bar himself last year. In fact, even when he started, you thought, blimey, there's a real Speedy Gonzalez here. He's not mucking about. But when he's not at his best, I think we realise then the rest of the midfield, as much as we've talked, Adi, about and during the summer about, blimey, haven't we got a packed central midfield? It's just how much, in comparative terms, the rest of the midfield is misfiring on account of the fact that this Speedy Gonzalez, this lunatic that we've got playing in central defensive midfield, isn't playing as well as he could or should do, meaning everyone else has then got to sort of almost cover him a little bit. And I think that one of the reasons that we're not playing as well as we could do is because the engine room itself is faltering, and the reason it's faltering is, and I really don't want to have to blame one player, but it's because Belieber is playing at the same level as probably the most other midfielders in this country at the moment, knowing full well that he can be so much better.
I think again it's a form thing. Maybe it's
I
a
hope
mental
so.
thing. But it's like I think he will get back up to his level. I'm sure he will. But he's not alone in being an underperforming player this year. We've had a few of them. So I
But having
just.
said that, I was thinking about this, and I was watching some footage of recent games, actually. There are one or two players whose stock has risen, not necessarily to the size of what Belieber's
Oh
doing,
yeah. Well,
but
that's where I wanted to go because I mean, I don't want to be negative. We didn't lose. It was a terrible header from Danny. Brilliant volley. Would have been a fantastic save had it not gone in off his back. Obviously, Wolves did have chance in this game, but we also had chances eventually. Eventually, I mean, and it's really frustrating because at one point we had 82% of possession in the game, which is insane. I mean, and if you're a Wolves fan and you're, I mean, if you're at home and you've got 18% possession against, I don't know, Manchester City or
You expect
Arsenal
that.
or Liverpool, then you might possibly expect that. But it just seems a bit odd against
Well,
us.
this is actually raises the point again that Jeremy made right at the beginning of the show about sort of home crowd and hostility and things like that. It became very apparent very quickly that in the first after sort of 10 minutes or so, that was a very nervous Wolves crowd, and they were very quiet. And you just think any home advantage that you've now had has been dissipated. A lot of it has been dissipated. And to be honest, until Wolves scored their goal, Brighton were bossing. And that figure that you've talked about there, Ady, was during that time. And I mean, what did Wolves score? About 20, 25 minutes, something like that.
It was well, basically, Balaidi got booked, and then they scored from the resulting free kick.
Right,
But that was
okay.
on 20. That was on 20 minutes.
Okay, so and
Or
until
one
then,
minute.
we bossed the game, we had the possession. They couldn't pass water. They were terrible Wolves. But it's just the fact that, again, misfiring up front. And it's one of your bete noirs again, Minteh. You know full well he's one of those players that for me is improving, but it's almost 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. I mean, he's getting there. Sorry, before AD goes on a rant, Jeremy,
I'm not
let
going to
us know
rant
what you
about
think. Let us know what you think about Yankuba Minteh.
I think for the most part, he's been one of the sort of more positive points of this season. He's obviously had a lot of goal involvement, so the Chelsea comeback and I was going to say the cross for this match. It wasn't his cross, was it? But
No, it wasn't. But there was a ball he put in for Jorginho, whose
for Rutter,
first-time
yeah,
shot
that
was
great save.
fantastically saved by
Yeah,
Johnston.
sure. Okay, sorry, go on,
And
Jeremy. Yeah.
also in terms of, going back to what we said earlier about the intensity and the covering back, he is one player that does look certainly fit enough at the moment at this stage of the season to do his defensive shift. So, I think there's been a couple of disappointments this year, but he's been, I think, more positive than negative, certainly.
Yankuba Minteh has been Albion's player of the season so far this season. He's been absolutely great, but just imagine how good he'd be if he knew what he was doing. It's like he's a live wire. He's back to front. He's everywhere on the pitch. He's covering every blade of grass. He's been absolutely brilliant, but he just sometimes tries to do too much. Sometimes I think less is more, and I think he needs to understand that a little bit more. I mean, the ball we put in for Jorginho, that was
That was
absolutely
delicious. Yeah.
mint. It was a minty ball.
How long have you been working on that one?
Just came to me.
Great.
But yes, anyway.
No, it's that. I mean, for him, it's for me, it's for it, Minteh, it's just basically set your controls to haywire because you don't. I think it was one of the things that actually him and Gruda, because Gruda started, the pair of them when it came to wing play just didn't know when to pass, when to go, when to not do this. It was their decision making. You know that there's a certain amount of talent there. You know that with Gruda, you know with the Minteh. We'll probably have it with Watson when he grows into his role. Mitoma, we know, has been there, seen it, done it. But it is at any given moment, it is for any footballer, but it's the decision making. Do you cross it? Do you play it back? Do you try and, I mean, Rutter was trying to be, he was trying to Nelson his way through so many players.
Well, Gruda was doing that as well. I mean, I've got it written
That's
down
what I
here, but
mean, yeah.
I mean, Gruda is always hungry to get on the ball.
Well, absolutely, but then
And,
also he's not that
he
hungry to
was,
get off it either.
again, Jeremy, he was another bright spot for this. I mean, there was a couple of instances. There was that one where he went for that 50-50 ball with Johnston in the Wolves' goal. He just got there ahead of him, but he couldn't quite divert it into the goal. He was trying to power through, he had a couple of shots deflected wide. He was always trying to make something happen, and I
And then he
just
gets injured while we're Germany. Brilliant.
Well,
I think
that's not necessarily a bad thing.
but I think that also goes back a little bit to why Belabor is so important. I mean, I don't think there's been a successful football team in history that hasn't had a sort of a ball winner, shielding the defence, a Deschamps who wins the ball, doesn't do anything with it except give it to Zidane, or a Nobby Stiles in 66, whatever it is. And in modern football, you need a bit more than that. So you've got a Belabor who wins the ball back and then can go on a marauding run as well. But that's why that defensive shield is so important, especially when you've got those kind of unpredictable wingers who could create something or could lose the ball in a dangerous position.
Let's face it, we've been spoilt for them in the last 5 years, haven't
Sure.
we?
Okay.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, the sort of, to an extent, the problem with the Brighton model of always getting rid of these players, because you don't know if they're going to be replaced. And if they do, it takes 2 or 3 years for them to develop and then 5 seconds for Chelsea to sign a check.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we
Shakespeare's. Well, hang on, sorry, but can I actually just then finalizing that point, the punchline to Jeremy's point is, and we still beat them.
But not
There you go.
Wolves.
But
Okay,
not Wolves.
well, we did equalise, and the cross actually did come from another bright spot of the season so far, which is Maxim Dekuyper. He's probably
I
unlucky
like
not to
him.
stop.
I like him.
I like him a lot. I mean,
I don't
he
think.
obviously goes to the same barber as Mats Wieffer, because it's like.
Yeah. Oh, that is. There is a touch of kind of the Echo and the Bunnymen about it, isn't there?
Really? Well, maybe a flock of seagulls,
Yeah,
actually.
that's entirely possible. The only people that the only thing he doesn't really like is the advert hoarding at Bournemouth.
Well, that wasn't his fault, but
No,
yeah, but
exactly.
it was a great ball for Van Hecke. I love this. Obviously, the ball clearly came from De Kuyper. It was a beautiful cross, but on the stats, because basically, when Van Hecke went to
Simas touched it.
and they've given the assist to Tsimikas.
Oh, that's rotten.
It's
Is it
genius.
was it a case of the Simas's header? I mean, the distance between the two can't be more than about 6 inches, if that. So, I mean, I'm just thinking that maybe Simas's header was aimed one way, but when Van Hecke headed it, it kind of almost like deflected, and his header took it the other way. Is that
No,
largely how
they
you'd see
both
it?
just went for the same ball, and basically it just brushed it. I don't think Tsimikas can claim any sort of assist or any, like, because the ball didn't change direction. It just basically hit both of them at the same time. It just
But
came
what does that
off.
also tell you about Wolves defending, that there's two players unchallenged for it?
Well, true, but you know what? I mean, Wolves are okay, bottom of the league at the moment. But basically, I think we talked about green shoots of recovery there, and I think they will be all right. I can see, and I bet they brought in a lot of players on the last day
Well, quite.
of the transfer window. So again, it takes time for these things, and it's going to take time for us to get it completely right. And I think hopefully, I mean, I we're going to talk about this later, but the international break is just it just makes everything so stop start at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, we've got another one next month, haven't
Well, we can talk about it now, which is why it's a good, probably a good thing that they're merging the international breaks together next season.
Have you seen this, Jeremy? The UEFA, I don't know if it's FIFA or UEFA. Well, it must be FIFA because it's a World Cup thing. They're merging on the international break, so there's basically the end of September, beginning of October. There's a 3 week break in the Premier League.
I hadn't seen that. I mean, part of me thinks it makes sense. Part of me thinks it's kind of, I guess, unlucky if you've got a couple of big international injuries, then, they miss half a qualifying campaign. But I guess, it's the same
Yeah.
for everyone.
I think it will be sort of swings. It is a swings and roundabouts thing, because during what apparently what it is that during that break, instead of an international team playing two games, they'll play four. But what it does also mean is that there'll be fewer breaks. So I suppose we're going to have the same length, in as much as, yes, it's no games for three. Actually, if there's no games for 3 weeks, that kind of implies there's two weekends that are missed out, whereas at the moment
Yes.
we're on three. So in theory, then it just spreads the season out just that little bit thinner. Because at the moment, the December fixture list in the Premier League is a farce, isn't it? Was it seven games?
Something like that, 'cause, and we should, well, you're playing catch up for all the international breaks, which is why, you
Hmm.
know, I mean, well, I said at the top of the show, it's a chance to get some of these players, like, indoctrined into the the Brighton way, the Hertzler way.
You say R&R. I don't think they're allowed to rest too much, mate. They're still going to beat up, put through their paces.
Some of them do go off on little mini breaks.
Yeah, I know, but it's not as though they'd be sort of. Yeah, I mean, it's.
They're not going. They're not doing the Christmas markets in Belgium. I mean, it's like.
No, fine, fair enough, but.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As ever, the show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited, Alan.
They are. Thank you very much indeed to Dave Costa at Flowers Unlimited, who sponsors this show. You can go to their website and order their stuff, flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk, and this is what they say about themselves. Whatever your reason for sending flowers or gifts, we can help. If it's a birthday, anniversary, birth, celebration, thank you, sympathy, sorry, or anything else, we have the answer. If it's a wedding, corporate event, our team will come up with something just to wow you. If it's a funeral, we can guide you in choosing a tribute that really reflects the life of your loved one. Trust us to provide the service and quality you really deserve. And I can actually sort of really vouch for this because, like I say, when I got married just over a year ago, they were absolutely brilliant. They sorted out the flowers for my, well, not for me. I just had a tiny little thingy on my lapel, but they sorted out
a buttonhole,
out of flowers. The buttonhole, thank you. That's a kiddie. Well, anyway, so go to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, for all these things and more. And if you tell them that you're an Albion season ticket holder, they'll give you a 20% discount.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton, Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
And with that in mind, I just want to tell you about an event that's taking place at the Amex next month. It's the brilliant Price of Football with our good friend Kieran Maguire and his co-host Kevin Day. They will be hosting a live Price of Football podcast at the Amex. That's Wednesday the 19th of November. It starts at 6 o'clock, goes on through the rest of the evening. And I think the important point here is that as per the thing you just heard from Dean just now, all proceeds from that evening will be going to the Brighton, Hove and District Samaritans. So if you want to go to the Price of Football podcast, it's at the Amex Wednesday, the 19th of November. Ticket prices on the Eventbrite site now are £18.59. I suspect it's £18 plus whatever the fee is. And like I say, all proceeds go to the Brighton, Hove and District Samaritans.
Yeah. And actually, whilst we're still on that subject, just a big thank you to everyone who got in contact with me after Dean was on the show a couple of weeks ago. In regards to the 1901 training places that the Samaritans are giving out, more details of that will be coming out soon. The club will be announcing that shortly.
Well, hopefully, at the very least, you know, at that evening I've just mentioned there. So, yes.
Possibly so.
But anyway.
But anyway, on to other matters. And Jeremy, is there actually a title race going on in France?
Hopefully. I think it's PSG basically obviously came off Champions League win, which I think is not surprising. There's a sort of bit of decompression after that. But they went straight from Champions League into Club World Cup. So they haven't really had a break. I think they sort of with their usual mixture of arrogance and realism thought, well, we'll use the first month or two of the league season as our pre-season. But then they've also had to contend with quite a few injuries. So, yeah, as things stand, I think definitely they're not putting up any trees. And it's a lot closer than it probably should already have been. But yeah, it's for those other teams to kind of, another cliche, but, you know, make hay while the sun shines. Because at some point, PSG will get their players back. They'll get their act together. And I think it needs a Marseille to sort of have already built a little bit of a lead over PSG to really make it a title race.
Well, there's a lot of Brighton interest in Ligue 1 this year. Obviously, for looking at Strasbourg, managed by Liam Rossini, the team featuring Julian Cesar and Valentin Barco. Obviously, not our favourite team, bearing in mind they're owned by Bluco. How's that gone down, that ownership thing gone down in France? Is it as unpopular there as it is here?
It is. I mean, the whole idea of sort of multi-club ownership is a sensitive issue in France, because French clubs are, apart from basically everyone apart from PSG, have got financial concerns. Even the other big clubs, I think all of them are sort of prey to being taken over. There was a similar issue, to the Palace one, with at some point there was a concern about whether Toulouse, who are owned by the same people as Milan, would be allowed to play in Europe. There's Troyes, who were owned by one of City's multi-group things, and they've been treated extremely badly and gone down two divisions. There's Monaco,
Wow.
who clearly Nice, who clearly Radcliffe has just forgotten about. Now he's signed United. So there's issues there. And Strasbourg, it's a weird one, because definitely at the start of last season, when all these loanees came in from Chelsea and they had an extremely young squad, I think all the Strasbourg fans were on the warpath. But the fact that they've done really well has kind of ruined the narrative a little bit. They're in Europe, they're sort of top three at the moment. And so there's actually a kind of civil war amongst their fans. Half of them saying it's still disgusting. Basically, what triggered it recently was that the club captain, after the closing of the transfer window, was photographed in his Chelsea kit saying, with the announcement that he's going to join Chelsea in the summer. And
That's
so
going to
half the
go down like
fans
a
are
foreign and
saying,
national suit, isn't it?
right, exactly. So half the fans are saying this is, a disgrace. We're basically just Chelsea's plaything. And the other half are saying, but we're playing really good football. We're in Europe. We've got, one of the youngest squads in Europe, in Europe, in the top leagues, and yet we're still doing so well. Sort of shut up and enjoy the fact that we're getting the chance to see these sort of young talents being blooded.
But with that kind of thing in mind, I mean, despite the fact, like you say, Chelsea's plaything, Bluco, which does sound like something out of Butlins, have Strasbourg kind of spent big as if they were owned by a multinational conglomerate, or are their transfer dealings kind of in line with the rest of the French football?
Last year they didn't. Last year there were a lot of loan signings coming in, but this year I think they spent, I think, over 100 million euros in the summer,
Right.
and so far they've had a decent start in Europe. So I think they were genuinely looking to strengthen their squad so that they could sort of maintain good league form, but also have a European run. So, to be fair, I suppose, to Bluco, they have put some money in there, but the feeling is always, if these players do well at Strasbourg, they won't be there next season.
I should point out, Alan, that it's the Pontins that have the blue coat, which is always like a poor man's Butlins, which is how I like to look at Chelsea.
No,
But
sorry. In that case, sorry. The next question I was going to ask in that case is the I suppose the culture over there. I mean, you're saying that there's, like I say, a civil war brewing amongst the Strasbourg fans, and is it kind of split between those who, like, well, sorry, you've just said it. There's split between those who are enjoying the ride and those who sort of just don't want to be corporate puppets. So is that culture sort of pervasive across France, or is that something specific to Strasbourg?
I think there's the potential for it to be like that in any club. I mean, as I said, it hasn't affected every club, but certainly Nice, they felt that way in terms of Radcliffe. They've never felt that he's really been invested in their club. And certainly there is a feeling, I guess, similar to here, actually, that, there's a lot of owners there who don't really care about the football. And Bordeaux is the obvious example. A load of can't think of the word, but sort of traders, nothing about football, put the money in thinking they'd make a tidy
Investors,
profit.
yeah.
And yeah.
I mean, I know that there's. I mean, this isn't about France. This is going to Holland now, actually. But in regards to this, the whole multi-club thing, and I'm not sure if it was actually. I don't think it was Bluco at the time, but I know that Chelsea did have vested interest in Vitesse Arnhem, who very recently. The club
They
basically
folded.
died. They folded, but they managed to save it. They are back. They are
Oh,
still,
really?
yeah, they are still back, allowed to compete in the league again. But this is, it took various trips to various high courts and stuff to get to that point. But they are still going. But it was they were Chelsea was sending a load of their players over there and stuff as well. And it just didn't, with the Vitesse fans, it just didn't sit right with them.
This, I mean, this, the point I'm trying to sort of eventually spit out is that then you turn around and you look at Tony Bloom and you think, well, for all the fact that we're actually sort of concerning ourselves with multi-ownership. Now, admittedly, obviously, Tony Bloom has the controlling interest in Brighton and Hove Albion and another interest in Heart of Midlothian and Union Saint-Gilloise and Melbourne Victory. But he doesn't have a controlling interest. But it's enough that it's not just the money and as the point you're making about Bordeaux, it's not just the investors throwing the money in and see what happens. Tony Bloom will always do it strategically. He doesn't have the controlling interest, and I don't think he's actually going to be able to go to the Hearts chairman and say, right, we're going to do this, 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 and this. However, it's no mistake that even, you know, 5 minutes after he's thrown some money in, Heart of Midlothian are actually a very much improved side. And this is before any algorithm that he's actually going to allow them to get access to kicks in. So, you know, therein lies a point about just because you are own one massive club doesn't mean to say it necessarily follows that the rest of your, I suppose, underlings are going to follow suit.
But there's a right way to do it. There's a wrong way,
Jeremy.
Sorry, Jeremy.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think a lot of it is sort of optics in the way you do it. So your captain appearing after the closure of the transfer window, either announce it during the transfer window or Christmas break or next summer. Why did you have to do it sort of, during the season that your captain's leaving? Or I was going to use another example with Strasbourg.
Well, there was the example of John Textor and Lyon, and Lyon got relegated. I know they fought back and they went to the court and they were allowed to like stay in Liga and keep their European place, which kind of cost Crystal Palace.
Well, hooray for the French arbitration court.
Well, I think what you said, strategic, I think that's an important word. And I think that's the difference. You know, with Textor, at some point it felt like, you know, Lyon, Palace, Botafogo, even Everton, when he was linked with them, there were some very strange signings going on between all four of those teams. And then Chelsea, Strasbourg, as I said, there have definitely been some successes, but the Strasbourg feeling is we're just being sort of used as a laboratory. And then you've got someone like Chilwell. I know there was the tweet that was going around on transfer deadline day of Todd Bowley sort of phoning himself saying, do you want to sign Ben Chilwell? Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks a lot. And Strasbourg fans are like, you know, what the hell is
he talking to a sock puppet?
I think he was talking to Paul Barber just in a mirror, in a kind of an alternate universe.
Paul Barber says, Luca have got like loyalty points of us. So it's kind of like,
well, it paid for the terrorist, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Okay. Well, moving on for that. I mean, obviously, Strasbourg managed by Liam Rossini, and obviously a very popular player here at his time. A lot of people are taking a lot of interest in his trajectory, obviously how poorly he was treated by Hull, for instance, and the fact that he has gone to Strasbourg and he seems to be doing very, very well. How do you think he's doing?
He's doing brilliantly. I mean, everything we just said, although a lot of it comes from Chelsea loanees and Chelsea or Bluco money, he's got one of the youngest squads on the continent, and yet they should have qualified for Europa League last year. They gave away a stupid penalty in the last kick of the season, basically, which condemned them, if that's the right word, to Conference League. And third place at the moment, they're kind of well set for maybe qualifying for one of the bigger and competitions this year.
Is he conducting his interviews in French yet?
No. I did see a reference to Rossini Ball the other day in L'Equipe in the French.
Oh, really?
So,
okay, what defines Rossini Ball then?
I think lots of intensity, lots of high pressing. I think that's the main thing.
Right.
Yeah. But Julian Cesar got his first minutes for Strasbourg at the weekend. Valentin Barco seems to be doing very well, but he's playing more of a midfielder. He seems to have issues with gravity as well.
Jeremy was about to interject this.
Sorry, just quickly. I think there were three ex-Brighton players scored
Yes.
League and players scored, and Barco got an assist as well.
Yeah, and obviously Matt O'Riley scored his first goal for Marseille at the weekend. Still a bit of a weird one. I'm still not quite sure what the issue was here, because he seemed to be starting for us the first few games, and there seemed to be a parting of the ways, and now he's at the manager he's playing for the manager who wanted to sign him for Brighton.
Has the story clarified at all since he's moved to Marseille at all? Do you know, Jeremy?
No, I mean, nothing on the French side. I mean, I know, he gave a couple of interviews during the summer saying how he'd been frustrated about the way he was used last year, and obviously a lot of it was bad luck with that injury as soon as he came in. But in pre-season matches, it looked like everything was being built around him. So for me, it was really strange when he left. And yeah, he's always been linked with De Zerbi. Marseille, I think, had also tried to sign him previously. So if he was going to leave, it's not such a surprise where he ended up. But for me, it seemed weird to kind of play him so prominently all the way through pre-season, only to let him go as soon as the season started.
Yeah, and his career at Marseille, a bit of a patchy start. He got a few pelters from the media for his performance at Madrid, I think. But he seems to be growing into it, and De Zerbi seems to have like found a good role for him.
I think they love the stats. He seems to be running more than anyone else. And Marseille is one of those players where if you're not sort of putting in 100% effort, wearing your heart on your sleeve, then you're going to get the crowd going against you anyway. And then obviously, yeah, adding goals to the hard work and the sort of industry in midfield is only going to help. And yeah, dare I say, I think Brighton are missing a bit of that at the moment.
They're missing a lot of things at the moment. We're not
Yeah.
going to go there. Another former Albion player seems to be doing quite well. In fact, sign him up. Ansu Fati, he's doing all right, isn't he? Six goals and five appearances for Monaco.
Yeah, I think I might be getting this wrong. I'm not checking, but from memory, I think, definitely the two at the weekend and possibly one or two others have been penalties.
Yes, he
I
scored two
think
penalties against Nice.
possibly one was a similar to his first goal for the Albion. I think a consolation in a match where Monaco got
But
schmeissed by
he
someone.
scored twice against Metz, so you don't want to talk about that, do you?
No.
I was about to say, Nice against Monaco must be a bit fruity.
Yeah, I mean, it's seen as a big derby, and both teams have been quite unimpressive so far. And it was a decent match. I mean, three penalties, sending off, two goal comeback. Weirdly, it sounds like the Monaco coach could be sacked this week, even though they're sort of only 2, 3 points off the top of the table. But they have been underperforming so far. But they've sort of gambled on players like Fati, like obviously Pogba is due back after the international break. And yeah, I think a lot of how their season goes depends on whether those players can find their best form rather than their Albion form.
Actually, and the one that scored, another one that scored this weekend was a player who had a massive career at Albion, played so many minutes for us, which was Abdoulassimer, who scored a 90th minute winner on his second appearance, coming on as an 82nd minute sub. So, quite an
It
introduction.
was a nice header, and he's done well in France. He did well at Brest last year, scored some important Champions League goals. So another one where, the kind of player that maybe could have mixed things up a little bit at the moment for
And
Albion.
a current Albion player who's on loan at Auxerre came on at the 69th minute sub in that game as well. But
Who was that?
that was Ibrahim Osman. But
Right.
okay, well let's move on to matters closer to home. Albion are through to the next round of the Sussex Senior Cup. Woohoo! You watched the game, Al? You very much
Yeah,
enjoyed it.
there's a YouTube channel called Your Instant Replay. I've seen them turn up at work. In fact, I remember them turn up one time at a Renf game, the one where we beat Palace 8-1. No, I couldn't listen to the commentary. I've no idea who it was, but I couldn't listen to the commentary. But that was kind of interesting, in as much as, well, on the pitch. Obviously, the nature of the rules for the Sussex Senior Cup when the Albion take part is that, one, it's the under 21s, and two, they must always play away. So they're drawn against Hassocks.
Apart from the final.
Now, Well, yes, and even then, it's not as though the Amex is their home ground, is it?
No, that's it.
So anyway, the point is, it was it was a hard fought game. Hassocks, you know, sort of kind of robust, kind of physical, where the Albion were kind of slightly twinkle toed. But that's the kind of the difference between, yes, you can have all the skill in the world, but if you don't have the toughness, versus you can have all the toughness in the world, but if you don't have the quality at the finish there. So there was two kind of contrasting styles there. I mean, the Albion scored with a goal just after half time. I've actually noticed in the last, I don't know, year or 18 months or so, probably all of the Albion, the main Albion sides that I consider, the under 21s, the full men's side and the full women's side, seem to be at their most dangerous just after half time. That's when something will happen, and I think we score a lot of goals between 45 and 55 minutes. Anyway, that's when the winner was scored. But the other point I was going to say here, and I've got to be sort of a little bit careful here, but what I noticed, you know, from the camera that was showing the game, was that they have railings around the outside of the pitch in a way that obviously Wingate and Finchley don't, and there's a lot of consternation certainly around in non-league football about, yes, there's got to be a marked perimeter between the pitch and the stand, and yes, a physical barrier of some sorts. And obviously, considering what happened to Billy Vigard, then it was a horrific and awful tragedy. And I think that we haven't actually spent our time saying our sincerest condolences to his family. But dear God, come on the FA, come on everyone. Do something about to make sure that just doesn't happen again. Not every ground has it. I don't think Worthing has it. We go there quite often,
I think
AD.
Culver Road does on the stand side, though.
Yes, it does. I mean, I think probably the mitigating part of that is that it is actually set back slightly from the pitch.
Yeah.
Whereas when you see Wingate and Finchley's pitch, it's probably no more than 6 feet from the pitch. So, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. I'd echo the cries of those who wished for it to change, that take down the concrete walls and replace them with, by all means, a certain physical barrier.
Thing is, some of them are part of actual, like, I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
So, and obviously, there's got to be a funding issue here as well, because a lot of the walls are actually part of actual physical stands. So,
Yes, I get that point,
yeah,
absolutely.
it's certainly a conversation that's got to be had.
And let's
I'm
face
sure
it,
the
there is
authorities will
enough
do so.
money in football, and I'm looking at Premier League. Even if every Premier League club just took out, I don't know, a small percentage of what they, if they, that's not to say that it should be bypassed. The money goes to the Championship, League One, and League Two. I think there's more than a financial issue here. This is a safety issue. This is literally, and it's taken a tragedy to realise this, but this is now a life and death issue.
Well, it's not an isolated incident as well.
And
That's
it's
the
not an
problem.
isolated instance, considering what happened at Bath City 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Yes, we do appreciate that these things, to repair them, do cost money, and not every football club has that money. But there is money in football
Yeah.
out there to do something about this.
Okay. And the other another point, going back just back to the game, Albion won 1-0. And I discovered that we have another Ferdinand playing for us.
Yeah, how
That's
many do you
two of
want?
Rio's kids who play for the Albion.
What have we done to deserve that?
But this one looks quite good.
Yeah, he looked okay. He was part of a defence that kept a clean sheet. Good on him. He's a chip off the old block in terms of how he plays and what he looks like. And yeah, well, let's see what happens.
Okay. Well, let's see what happens indeed. And we will be seeing something else what happens next week when we're joined by Guy Butters, hopefully. We're talking about Albion in the community. But until then, thank you so much to Alan Ware. Thank you to Jeremy Smith. Thank you for joining us, Jeremy. And
Thanks,
I've been Andy
Simon.
Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Cheers, bye.
Ne dure pas toujours. dure pas toujours. Le ciel est devenu gris.